Philippians chapter 1, please. Philippians chapter 1, verse 9. Philippians 1 and verse 9. Last Sunday morning, I began with this text. I will finish next week, Lord willing. We will look at all of the three or four major prayer requests in this text. This, of course, is the Apostle Paul's prayer for the church at Philippi. I think it is, therefore, since it's apostolic, it would be the Lord's prayer for his people in general. So I'm going to speak on this morning. This morning is going to be a little different. We are not going to look at a single other verse. We're actually going to look at one line in the Scripture. We're going to read more, but I am going to exhort you and encourage you in what I consider. And by the way, just so you know, the only reason I'm preaching this series is today. I think the passage is, it tells you what Paul wants for Christians or what the Lord wants for us. We talked about last week, all for love, that our love be formed by Christ himself, informed by biblical knowledge, and transformed by judgment or discernment. Let's stand and we'll read this text together, if you would, please. Next week, we'll finish up. I haven't found anything that interests me more than this one line. And I have promised myself that I am not going to get on tangents. Because this is the kind of sermon that my personality is drawn in a different direction. Do you all ever struggle with your personality? Do you even struggle with your sin? And this is not so much a sin, but I'm going to go a different direction. So let's read together Philippians 1:9. And this I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge and in all judgment or insight, discernment. We'll talk about that a touch later. Then we have the second prayer request, which follows from the first, that ye means you all. He's saying he wants all of the believers at Philippi, and I think in Lake County Baptist, to be able to approve, which is pass a test and be approved, things that are excellent, that you may be sincere and without offense till the day of Christ, being filled with the fruits of righteousness which are by Jesus Christ unto the glory and praise of God. We're going to look at just the first line of verse 10 this morning. It is certainly possible to speak on this prayer in one sermon, but to do it justice, we're going to look at it much more in-depthly. I'm going to speak this morning on this subject, things which matter most. When it talks about that you may approve things that are excellent, he's talking about there are some things in life that excel other things. And friend, the things that are excellent are the things which matter most. Our Father, I ask your help this morning as we look at this beautiful text. As I try to reflect on the depth of it, but yet the simplicity of it. How do we live lives where we actually pay attention to things which matter most? Help us to hear this great text. Help it to be a theme for this new year, the things which matter most. Help it to be a dominating idea in our lives. I ask in Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. My wife asked me, and before I tell this story is true, but it's not true. You say, what do you mean? Yes, it's my sermon. No, it's happened 10 or 15 times. So I'm not telling you one story. I'm kind of combining bunches of stories because I've done this many times. Guys, when I get done with the story, we'll have time for you to say amen. Jenny asked me on my way home to pick up some bread. She says, "You're going to go past Aldi's? Why don't you pick up some bread on the way home?" And since I am a good, obedient husband, of course, I gladly agreed to bring home some bread. Now, of course, the fact that we were going to have sandwiches, I'm a little bit self-serving. I wanted bread for my own sandwiches. So anyhow, that day I taught, did the normal things here and got off, and it was time to go home. So I left, got in my car, went over here to York House, drove east on York House to Sheridan, went north on Sheridan, and went to Aldi's with the express purpose of getting some bread. You say, why were you getting the bread? Well, again, I'm an obedient husband. Number two, I'm self-centered. I wanted some food. And thirdly, I didn't want my wife to be mad at me any more than usual. So I went into Aldi's. Now, I don't know about you, but when I walked into Aldi's, I have to be careful. Normally, I am a surgical person. When I go to a place, I go to the one thing. I just, I'm in, I'm out. Because if I start looking around, well, this is one of those days I walked in and I I got distracted. But I was a good husband. And I wondered as I walked through the first aisle, I wonder if we have any milk at home. Maybe my wife would like me to buy some milk. Are you a good husband? You're not a good husband like this. Okay. I thought, so I went back and looked at the milk and I saw some milk and I got it. And right beside the milk are the eggs. And I thought, I wonder if we have enough eggs at home. So they're cheap. And I thought, well, I'll get a couple dozen eggs. So I bought a gallon of milk. I get two dozen eggs. I look around and then I get beside myself. I start thinking, you know, they sell pretty good guacamole here. So I went over into the aisle where the guacamole is. And by the way, don't send a man to find food. I cannot even find myself. Half an hour later, I've looked on every place, and it was right where I thought it was, but I couldn't see it. And I finally found the guacamole. So I had a gallon of milk, two dozen eggs. Of course, I didn't bring a cart in because I only went in for bread. Thank you. I went in for bread. So I had my milk, I had my eggs, I had my guacamole. I walked up to the counter. I put it all on the counter. I paid for it. I drove home. I got home. Frenchie's, it's a testimony. And sooner or later, my wife says, "Where's the bread?" Now, I have a question for you. Did I do anything wrong that day? But did I do what my wife wanted me to do? Now, friends, this is a funny little illustration. I'm not going to be mean this morning. Look at me. We're going to talk about things which matter most. I'm sure she liked the milk. I'm sure she liked the eggs. I enjoyed the guacamole. Where's the bread? The things that mattered most was bread at that moment. You say, Pastor, what happened? I got distracted. And I will say this, and this will be the last time. We have a third of our church perpetually in a state of distraction. And they cannot figure out what matters most about anything. But they do a lot of trivial stuff. Well, let's look at the text. Would you look back with me? Philippians 1, verse 10. I want to focus primarily on just that line. This is Paul's second prayer request. It comes out of his first prayer request. I think it's almost as if you have to grasp the love of God that he has for us and how we are to love him and love other people. That has to be formed by God himself, informed by knowledge, and transformed by discernment in order to get here. But we're going to move to here today. Paul prays that ye, meaning, you know, you all Christians, this isn't for the pastors, deacons, Sunday school teachers, it's for all believers, that ye may approve, which has the idea of discerning plus coming to a conclusion that this is that way, things that are excellent. Things that are excellent. I have four ideas this morning. They all connect. Number one, there are things which matter most. Things that are excellent has the idea of this. Things that are surpassingly good, things that excel. I think several versions say things that are what is best or what is excellent. But however we exactly understand this, Paul is focusing on the idea that there are things which matter most. They're excellent. Excellent or best is a comparative term. And friend, I'm going to just build it. I'm going to walk down a road. So this sermon this morning is I'm going to start here, and when we're done, we're going to walk right out the doors. Literally. There are things which matter most. There are some things that are okay for you to do. There are some things that are good for you to do. There are other things that are better for you to do. And then there are those things that are the best, that excel. He is praying that you and I start living our lives for things which matter most. Of course, there are things that are okay to do. Of course, there are things that are good to do. Of course, there are things that are better than that. And then there's the best. The higher up the list we go, the more the things matter. So friends, if something is just okay, that shouldn't preoccupy your life. That should just be, okay, I do this because whatever. The higher up the list you go should be where you put your investment, your time, your energy, your prayer, your thoughts, because we should live our life for things which matter most. Is that fair? All right, let's look back at the verse again, please. That you approve things that are excellent. So I have stated, point number one, there are things which matter most. Secondly, which implies there are also things which matter least. Friends, if there are things that are excellent, by very nature means there are things that are not excellent. So when we're thinking about this text and Paul's prayer for us, just logically thinking, reasoning through this, there are some things that matter most. Then there's some things that matter least, or I could say less, or I could say not at all. It would be very foolish to live your life fixated on things that matter least or not at all. Now, Paul is attempting, friend, to do something for you and I. And here's where we'll spend time. He's trying to do something for you and I that's extremely profound. When we think about life, when we think about activities, Paul is trying to reorient us about how we think about our life. Please look at me. He's trying to reorient us. He does not want us to live our life like this, right or wrong, good or evil. That's not part of a Christian discussion. Let me say it this way. Becoming a Christian, getting saved, settles these kinds of matters. It moves us beyond the simplistic thinking of right or good, or right and wrong, good and evil. You say, why? Because if something is wrong, that doesn't matter at all, and you should never be part of that. So the moment you get saved, you get out of this little game of right and wrong, good and evil. He's reorienting you to start thinking about life in a different way. Something that's good, something that's better, something that's best. Right and or good should be your baseline. You should never think outside of just doing what's right or good. Your starting point, your assumption must be, well, this is good. Why would you do something wrong? Why would you be involved in evil? Now it's only a question. Once you, it's almost like you were pointing this way, and God reorients you this way, and you're no longer thinking about what evil you can do and what wrong you can do. It's now about good, but then there are some things that are good that are okay to do. There are some things that are better, which are better to do. And then there are things that are best. Those are the things that matter most. Now, are you ready? A Christian should never have these foolish conversations. What can I get away with? What is everyone else doing? What do you mean, Pastor Warren? The Bible doesn't say I can't. Do you know how many times I've heard that foolishness? Look at me. Once your life, if you're truly a believer, and you're no longer oriented to good and evil, right and wrong, you have moved. That's in the past. Now we just live a life of I can do good, I can do better, I can do best. The whole orientation changes. So if you come to me and say, Pastor Warren, the Bible doesn't say I can't do this. Do you realize how foolish that sounds to me? The Bible does not say, and I'll be gentle with this, that you cannot swim in a sewer. Do I need to tell you that? Friend, the Bible, think about how thick the Bible would have to be to forbid all the foolishness that people do. The Bible's not trying to give you this checklist of 14,000 things you can't do. He's trying to get you past the evil and as a believer bring you into a life where you're doing that which is good and even that which is better and if possible, that which is best. So friend, things which matter most implies there are things which matter least. And we're no longer part of that discussion. Our lives are, we think differently now, or we ought to. Always things that are excellent, things which matter most. No race to the bottom. No what can I get away with? Or what is everybody else doing? Or Pastor, the Bible doesn't say. Or my favorites. Pastor Kowak has never heard this as our school administrator. Who made you the judge and jury? Who gave you the right to judge? What's wrong with this? May I say this? Do you realize Paul's prayer? If you're still living there, here's your problem. Your orientation is still to the unsaved life. As a believer, your whole orientation changes. No longer are you thinking about, man, is it right? Can I get away with it? Oh, no, that's kind of the talk of fools. It's good, it's better, it's best. And if it's best, it's the thing that matters most. So let me ask a question. This week, if my wife says, do you have time to go to Aldi's on the way home? What's my answer going to be? I'm a good, obedient husband. Of course, dear. Yes, dear. By the way, haven't I told you the way to have a good marriage? Young guys, here it is. You have to have four words. Two words and two words. You guys got it. Here it is. And to have a good marriage, you need to be able to say, yes, dear. Come on, guys, say it with me. Ready? Yes, dear. That's all you have to do. And every 2 weeks, here, dear, marital problems dissolve. So my wife says, Ralph, will you go? You mean she doesn't call you pastor? She calls me lots of things. Very old man. If my wife says, honey, would you go get us some bread? Look at me, please. There are things which matter most, and which implies there are things which matter least or not at all. If she said, bring me some bread, I would not bring home some crack cocaine. That would be still reoriented to this. I would not bring home some alcohol. I wouldn't bring home some marijuana. I wouldn't bring home some, you know, I wouldn't tell her, well, I was over gambling at one of the games of chance or the games of skill or whatever they are. You see, that's an orientation. May I say this? If you're still there, we got a problem. Because a Christian's not oriented back that way. We're reoriented this way. Now, if she said, would you bring home some bread and I brought home some milk, is that good? Well, milk is good. If she said, I want some bread and I brought home guacamole, guacamole is good, but it isn't what? It isn't the bread. It isn't what she wanted. Friend, we're reoriented totally. Things which matter most, which implies, sadly, there are things which matter least or not at all. To make it simple, As you become a believer, your life is oriented around things like this. Are you ready? Family, God, church, country, adding to all of those, that just becomes the center of who you are. So to do something good would be to spend time with your family. That's good. To do something better would be to have a conversation with your family. Do you understand conversation? Not a monologue, a back and forth. To do something best with your family, fathers, grandfathers, would be to not only have to be time with them and not only to have a conversation, fathers and grandfathers, it would be to invest in those children. That would be that which matters most. To watch a television program is a waste of your life. And we now think family time is watching TV for 8 hours a day. No, that's individual time. You watch TV as an individual, not as a family. Unless you watch a movie with me, of which you would not. My children swore off of it, as did my wife. You say, why? Because if I watch something, I put it on pause and we talk about what we're watching. Nobody wants to watch anything with me. You say, you're weird. Thank you. Thank you for noticing. I'm being dead serious. There are people here that never figured out your family matters. And look at me. If you're 30, 40, or 50, when you're 60, 70, and 80, the only thing that matters is your church family and your family and the people you have worked with for Christ, that sort of thing. You will not look back at your life and say, wow, I am an expert on TV programs from the 90s. I'm not telling you not to watch a TV program. Please look at me. Are you listening? TV is what I call okay. Everybody needs some relaxation. It's okay. Is it good? It's okay. Everybody needs it. I get it. You say, do you watch football? No, I can't. You say, why not? St. Louis doesn't even have a team anymore. And the Bears were in hibernation for the last decade. So why would I watch football? But friends, I have no problem with that. As long as you understand, that's just okay. How about doing something good? How about doing something better? How about doing something best? Time with the family is good. Conversation with the family is better. Both time, conversation, and investment, best of all. Let me say this before we move on. There's a verse, we're not going to look at it. Proverbs 25:25 says, as cold waters to a thirsty soul, so is good news from a far country. Friends, good is keeping up with friends and family on Facebook. That's a good thing. Better is a phone call or a visit with that person, yes or no. A text, I want to say, that no, not being mean, texts are extremely impersonal. And they are can be very misinterpreted. Is she in here? She is. One of my favorite human beings in this church. I will not mention Emily Tupper's name. I texted her a year or two or three back and had her crying. I texted a joke. She didn't take it as a joke. Please look at me, friends. I think it's beautiful. I'm glad we have Facebook and things like that. You know, if you're older like me, 63, everybody knows. Your friends from college, you kept up with three of them because how do you keep up with all of them? Now you can keep up with people pretty easily, kind of keep track. Folks, that's a good thing. But a better thing is saying, you know, I'm going to do more than just see their picture. I'm going to call them once in a while. I'm going to email them. I'm going to visit them. But you know what's best of all? Are you ready? Knowing to speak a word in good season. You understand that? Let me give you a friend of mine. I have a red-headed friend, or at least I think he's red-headed. He might be white-headed now. We don't see each other often. He pastors in Danville, Illinois. I'll say his name. His name is Al Rudy. Pastor Rudy pastors Faith Baptist Church in Danville, Illinois. John Davis, you know John Davis at Maranatha? He pastored the church, and then he went there 18 years ago. Al came to that church. Al Rudy texted me, I don't know what day it was, 28, 29, 30. He just said this, Ralph, please pray for me. I'm doing my brother's funeral at 11 a.m. today. I'm not on Facebook with many people. Some of you know that, including my daughter, which hates me. You say, why? Because I prefer to keep in person with the people like that. But here, I talk to Al a couple times a year. So I texted him back immediately and say, Al, I will pray for you. This is what he told me. He texted me back. I didn't call him. He's having a funeral in two. He texted me at 8:09 in the morning, I think. He was having the funeral at 11. I didn't think I could call him. But I texted him back, said, I will pray for you. I did. Al texted me back, and he said on Christmas Eve, he was at his brother's house. His brother is 62. Al is 63, same age as me. He was at his brother's house up by Lake Winnebago. I cannot remember which town now. He said, I was at my brother's house, and my brother died right in front of me with no health problems. They think he had a burst aneurysm and just died. Now you hear me. Are you listening? Things which matter most is not looking for gossip on Facebook. Your little tidbits of knowledge that give you power over people, you think. Facebook is beautiful and it's a good tool to keep in touch broadly. Better than that would be to pay a visit. Best of all is knowing when to call with some good news from a far country. I called Al. This is what he told me. He's a good guy. He says, you need to pray for me. He says, because the people at church are going to want to comfort me. And he says, Ralph, I can't get the image of my brother dying right in front of me out of my mind. And I'm doing CPR, compressions on my brother, and he was gone. I called him. Do you realize how good it is to call somebody at the right time? You know, I said something. Look at Isaiah 50, would you? Let's look there. It's not in my notes, but I think it's a good passage for us to look at. Isaiah 50, verse 4, please. Friends, there are things which matter most, which implies there are things which matter. I have a question. If you're spending your life on things which matter least, what in the world is wrong? Don't you have some grandchildren? You say, I don't have any grandchildren. Adopted grandchildren to be investing in? Don't you have some children to be investing in? Having conversations about life? Talking about the different things? You say, I'm not good at things. Listen, my son went over to Jared and Amy's house and they had a leak. John is bizarre. He spent half a day fixing your plumbing, correct, Jared? Now, Jared, I wish I could say, I'm the guy that taught John how to do that. I know who taught John how to do that. I also know why he taught John, because I asked him to. There's that fellow named Mr. Losey. I also had him hang around this crazy guy back here in the back. What's your name? Tim Durham. You say, Tim is crazy. Oh, Tim is crazy. He walks into places looking for things to fix. John knows how to put windows in. You know why? Tim Durham. Friends, let's look at this text. The Lord God hath given me the tongue of the learned, that I should know how to speak a word in season to him or her that is weary. He wakeneth morning by morning. He wakeneth my ear to hear as the learned. My friend, there is nothing more beautiful than giving some good news from a far country. Now, hear me. We already know we lost somebody that was important to some of us in this room very much, Jerry Milburn. Some of us were on that Zoom meeting 3 or 4 weeks ago. I don't remember when it was. I had been talking to Jerry and Kathy for 2 or 3 months before this. And to be on a Zoom meeting with Jerry Milburn, are you all listening? Kathy Milburn doesn't need you to look at her Facebook thinking that gives you some kind of insight into something. Kathy Milburn's going to need a note, an email, or a text, or a visit, but not today. 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, a year, 2 years. You don't sit there. You're at one chair. Your husband's at the other chair. He's in great health. He just retired from the military. And all of a sudden you look over and your husband dies in front of you. By the way, only God. Some of you have never spent time because you're trivially oriented. You do a bunch of really important nothing. You better beg God and pray that God gives you the sense to know how to say the right things at the right time. My buddy Al Rudy's going to need more encouragement. And frankly, I'll be there one day too. Let's look back at Philippians, please, chapter 1. Philippians chapter 1 in verse 9 and 10. I have said, and by the way, this sermon is so simple. There are things which matter what? So a kid comes to me, parents come to me and say, is it all right if my kids play video games? I have no problem. Our video games, our piano. Our video games, our reading. Our video games, our martial arts. By the way, video games are that which is barely okay. It's not with that which matters most. You know, we have 45-year-old men still living at home in their parents' basement playing video games. Because their life is oriented to trivia. We'll look at the third concept, and I'll just mention this. Paul says, in this I pray, that your love may abound yet more and more in knowledge. So whatever it is, however we live our life, it has to be done, it has to be informed by knowledge. And in all judgment, there has to be this element of discernment. That is the Greek word we get aesthetics from. It means insight, perception, discernment. It means having a sense of something or having a feel for something. Friends, I know what a hammer is. I know what a nail is. I know what a screwdriver is. You put all of the tools in my hand and Tim Durham's hand. Now, I'm not trying to be cute here. I have a few abilities. I'm not a humble guy. I don't do humble brags. God has given me some abilities. You put me in intellectual pursuits, I'm right at home. You put me with a hammer, I know what it is. I know what a screwdriver is. I know what a saw is. I know what a measuring tape is. This guy's running circles around me and I'm going, why? Because he has a feel for it. God himself has to give you a feel for what we're talking about. Otherwise, you will spend your life on things which matter least. So Paul says, our love has to be transformed by this judgment, discernment, an aesthetics, where you have a feel for something or you have a sense of something. And then he goes on in verse 10, that ye may approve, which is that process of testing, proving, examining something to determine this is what matters most. So number three, there are things which matter most, which implies there are things which matter least. Things which matter most require God's help to discern, to approve. Several years ago, I went to a family gathering. My mother was there, my two sisters, my brother-in-law, my brother was there and his wife, two son-in-laws were there. His two son-in-laws, by the way, I'd say that to their face, so do not get nervous. Who I am is who I am. They both have children. On Christmas Day, one traveled from, I don't know what state he's from, Mississippi, Arkansas, someplace, traveled to Southern Illinois. The other one's local. On Christmas Day, for the grandmother that neither one ever sees or ever talks to, didn't talk to my mother, Didn't talk to Jenny and I. Didn't talk to any of their children. Both of them went in the basement and played video games, and they're both 40 to 50. I will say this and move on to point number four, which will be totally positive. Are you listening? Things which matter most require God's help for you to discern. Otherwise, you will spend your life on trivia. By the way, why did I get together for Christmas? Can I ask? For the food? I can have food at home. I got together for my mother and for my sisters and for the family. Number four, and now I'm just going to exhort you by giving many examples. I have said there are things which matter most, which implies there are things which matter least. Paul says, I'm praying that you may approve things that are excellent. Things which matter most require God's help to discern them. Number four, things which matter most must never be left to the mercy of things which matter least. My friend, if there are things which matter most, they should predominate your life. Those things that are excellent, that are above, that surpass, that ought to dominate your life. Please hear me. If you're still back here trying to say, well, I don't agree with Pastor Warren about this, you're wasting your entire life. But if you're a person that knows there are things that matter most, and you're still wasting your life on things which matter least. Things which matter most should never be left to the mercy of things which matter least. Period. I'll say this, and then I'm going to do a list, and we'll have a few slides. Years ago, one day, I played a game. Now, please do not get offended too deeply. You have to understand, the guy you're looking at, I don't like games. Jenny, is that correct? I can barely tolerate when I'm get together. I understand the purpose of games. When my mother and her sisters and a bunch of women get together, I love them. They like to play dominoes. But dominoes is actually a means of talking. So you play the dominoes while you're talking. So they're really getting together for each other, which is beautiful. You say, do you play dominoes? No, I don't. Because you're too spiritual. No, I can't see the colors. So it takes me forever to figure out which one goes with which one. You say you can count them. Have you ever tried counting as opposed to looking at the colors? But years ago, somebody asked me to play this game, and I did it. One time. For me, it is the life's most despicable game. You say, what is it called? Trivial Pursuit. You say, what didn't you like? I realized it was literally a game about nothing. Who was the actor in, it's like, may I say this? I have a grandson. When I leave here, I love you. When I leave here at the end of this service, the first place I'm going, if I can beat Jared to it, I'm going to see Jesse. You say, why? He's a thing that matters most. Learning about some actor that played in some role 25 years ago is exactly zero interesting to me. All right. Things which matter most must never be left to the mercy of things which matter least. Things which matter most might be things like this. Degrees you could have obtained. Training you could have finished. You know, training in mechanics, plumbing, electrical, carpentry, computers. My cousin, Bert Mahack, I love old Bert. He's a good old guy. Bert Mahack taught in a program in Wisconsin for millwrights. Bert said, we have a program for millwrights, one-year program. You can walk right away from the program at the end of 1 year and make $50,000 a year. If you take the two-year program, you can make $75,000 a year, and that's a millwright program of 2 years. There's 1,000 things you could be doing except playing video games or Trivial Pursuit or solitaire or any of the other foolish things that we, you say, but they're not wrong. You're missing the point. Things which matter most. Languages you could have learned. As my daughter keeps reminding me, how is your Duolingo, Dad? Relationships you could have developed or sustained. Books you could have read. Promotions you could have pursued. Challenges you could have taken. Opportunities you could have pursued. How about skills you could have mastered? My wife has been teaching piano our whole 25 years here. She taught piano in St. Louis. We have some young people that are pretty good pianists. Actually, which one? Kim, you play too. You play better than your dad. Kim plays well. We got several. Look at me, folks. You say, I'm so busy. All right, take a breath. Stop and ask yourself, how much time do you spend with trivia? How about this, a skill you could have mastered? I want to ask everybody a question. Have you ever met somebody that's 60 years old that walks up to you and says, hi, my name is Bill. You know, I play the piano really, really well, but I wish I'd have quit playing piano when I was 8. Now let me ask another question. How many people have you met that took piano when they were 8 and are now 50 or 60 and said, you know, I wish I would have never what? Friends, here it is. Things which matter most should never be left to the mercy of things which matter least. Yes, skills you could have mastered. People you could have witnessed to. You know, we have a house next door. It's Tim Duran's house now because he has to rebuild it. That house was given to us. We ended up paying for most of it, but by Frank Pasolacqua. You know, Frank Pasolacqua got saved down on the base. And his wife got saved right over here. I led her to the Lord right over here during a Sheffy movie, 1980. Frank got saved a little bit before. We had a Bible study down on the base for the whole time I was here back in the 70s, in the laboratory, in the middle. And you know, friends, I look back at that and I think this. I witnessed to Frank. I'm asking you a question. When's the last time you witnessed to somebody? I witnessed to Frank Pasolacqua. He talked to me over a period of time. He got saved. Kathy got saved. Yes, they became members of this church. Yes, they gave us the parsonage next door. Yes, they moved on. But you understand, folks, Frank has been with the Lord now for how many years, Mike? 7 or 8 years. By the way, have you ever witnessed somebody that got saved and you said, you know, I wish I'd spent more time playing Trivial Pursuit. Man, I wish I'd invested my life in solitaire. Or I know, watching more television programs. The people you could have witnessed to, the bridges you could have built to others, the friendships you could have maintained. And by the way, to have friendships, you got to do some maintenance. The investments you could have made in eternity. And I'm going to say both a thank you and make the statement. The missions and missionaries you could have supported. And I want to say on behalf of Cliff over here, our good deacon, and Judy that run our youth program, thank God that you have the idea about the young people in our church rallying around a missions project. I think we've raised some money. I don't know exactly how much, but that's going to be a huge blessing in several places. Would you put the first photo up, please? Cliff, will you, turn out whatever we need to turn out. I saw this photo for the first time in my mother's house. Let me see how long ago it was. I believe it was sometime since I've been here. It might have been in St. Louis. Now, friends, I do not have a corresponding photo, so forgive me. But when I saw this photo, I looked at the photo, and they're in kind of dress, but, you know, the woman looks more like, you know, older dress. I looked at my mother and said, Mom, who is Marilyn with? You know what? It wasn't my mother. It was Grandma. I was at Grandma's house, my mom's mom. I said, Grandma, who is Marilyn with? Grandma looked at me like, she said, that's not Marilyn, my cousin. She says, that's my mom. That's my great-grandmother and her husband, which I never met. He died in 45 or 46. Her name was Letty Pearl Adcock. That's her wedding photograph in the year 1900. Now, I want every deadhead in this room to hear me for a couple minutes. Here's another things which matter most. The conversations you could have had. Great-grandma was born in 1884. She died in 1974 at age 90. If you don't know where I fit in, I was 17 years old when she died. She got married in 1900, and she had 11 children. Next photo. Everybody in this room has seen this photo. I showed this to you a month ago. Great-grandma's on the end. Her name was Letty Leticia. Same name, see. Letty Pearl. I like the name Pearl Mutia, see. And these are some of her children. When this picture was taken, two of her children were gone. This was taken in 1958, the year after I was born. Aunt Ivy's next, then Aunt Almy, then Aunt Opal, then Aunt Lorraine, then Aunt Mary, then my grandmother, and there were four boys. And when this picture was taken, the baby girl was already dead, and there were four boys. I said, and in 1958, the one was long gone. He died from wounds from World War II. The other three had also been in World War II, but one, the last one, Uncle Lawrence, had not gone. The two brothers, Frank and Uncle Don, had gone and were in the Battle of the Bulge. That's her family. May I say this to you? That's a conversation I never had because I was too foolish to think about anybody other than myself at age 17. Great-grandma, I always honored her, respected her, and I grew up in a different family, obeyed her. If you didn't obey great-grandmother, you would not have existed. But I never thought to ask great-grandma any questions because I was really preoccupied with important teenage stuff. She had four sons that fought in World War II. The two in ones, Uncle Henry and Uncle Don, fought in the Bulge. Don and Frank. Uncle Henry, the one not pictured, was already dead, long dead, died from wounds suffered in Ormoc City on the island of Leyte, December 10th, 1944. She'd already lost a baby. She had lost her husband in 1945. By the time I knew her, Aunt Almy was gone. The third one over. Great-grandma, great-aunt Ivy, and then the third one over. She was gone from cancer. I never met her. I never thought about asking her any questions because I was pretty smart. I knew everything. I was on top of things. You know, I'm the center of the universe. You know, my trivial pursuit is life, is it not? I never thought to ask her what it was like to lose a baby. Actually, the number one question I've asked my mother and everybody that knew great-grandma, I said, did great-grandma ever talk about losing her children? Because, friends, when she died in 1974, at age 90, she had lost the infant, she had lost Aunt Almy, she had lost Uncle Henry, she had lost her husband, and the two brothers that were in the Battle of the Bulge were both dead also. One died in 66, one died in 68. She had lost five people in her family. I've asked my mom, did she ever talk about it? And mom's statement is always this. As far as I know, she never mentioned it. But I had to ask her. Should have. What was it like to be born and grow up in 1884 in rural southern Illinois? How did you get water in the house? Where did you go to the bathroom? Was your house heated? The answer to all of those is rural. I would have liked to have asked her who she knew. Can you go back to the previous picture? When they got married in 1900, they got married in Mount Gilead Baptist Church. There's various names they call the town this is associated with, but there was no town. You've seen the church. You guys have seen the little church. It's way out in the country, but there was a place they call Woody when I was a kid, but I think it was called Woodville in the 1800s. In 1900, she got married in Mount Gilead Baptist Church. Mount Gilead Baptist Church was a Baptist church on both sides of my family. I still have people from my dad's side of the family that go to the church way out in the country. My mom's side went there also. Her husband and her got married there. When they got married, are you ready for this? She knew somebody that was the first family immigrant in southwestern Illinois when the first homesteaders moved into the state of Illinois. Because the church they got married in, and the church they got saved in was the church of his great-grandmother. Was it great? Let me think how this works. He's my great. Yes. When they got married in 1900, my great-great-great-grandmother, who was born in 1811, was still a member of that church attending. I could have asked her about the original inhabitants of Illinois, but I was too busy thinking about 17-year-old stupid. Important stuff. I could have asked her because she would have known the first homesteaders. She would have known because my great-great-great-grandfather was in the Black Hawk War with Abraham Lincoln and all the people that were here. My family members were in the Civil War. One of them fought in the Battle of Shiloh in Mississippi with General Grant. They would have known these people. It's a conversation I never had. It's one of the great sorrows of my life. Think about this, friend. Are you ready for this? I knew my great-grandmother, which knew Rachel Adcock, and Rachel Adcock's parents would have been in the Revolutionary War. While I was thinking about important things, 17-year-old stuff. By the way, there's a slight excuse for a teenager. There is no excuse for an adult. When you leave this place this morning, and you dare go back to living a life based on trivia, God forgive you. How about living your life for things which matter most? Skip the photos to the next group. You ever see this guy? Is this the first or second photo of this? First, go to the next one. Nobody recognized that guy on the left. He used to sit there about where Rhonda is, Mr. Smith. Too late to talk to him. That picture was taken in World War II in the Aleutian Islands as he was flying fighter pilot. He was a fighter pilot, P-38 Lightning. The other one, go back to the other picture, was taken later in the 50s or 60s, where he was honored with the highest honor you could get during peacetime for some things he had done to protect our bases around the world. Looks like, I think, Jim, he was a major then, is that right? Yeah, I can't tell the color. All right, let's go to the last pictures. Wonder who that guy is. Next one. What you going to live your life for? Things which matter most are trivia. By the way, Junior, Leah, I'm glad you got to know your grandpa. Here's the problem. Your mom and dad brought him back from Cameroon because he was having some problems. Do you remember he was in the hospital? And I knew we'd get to talk to him again. We didn't. Here's my prayer for you this morning. That you live your life for things which matter most. Father, thank you for your word this morning. I think it's probably okay for us to be trivially oriented, but then there comes a time when it's like, that is just foolishness. You only got so much time with the children. You only got so much opportunity with the grandchildren. You only have so much time to teach a Sunday school class, work in Awana, support missionaries. This life moves on. It moves on quickly. I would ask this morning that every person think about things which matter most. This I ask and this I pray in Christ's name.